This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We gotta stop them. They're gonna kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
It's time for the Brian Roos Show on Revolution Radio, coming to you from beautiful Vancouver, Canada. Brian and his guests talk about the big picture, the world view of reality with good and evil. They explore the truth and lies from aliens to globalists to advanced ancient civilizations.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know. It's fun though, isn't it?
Welcome to Revolution Radio. This is Brian Roo on the radio Revolution Radio Show, Brian Roo Show. I'm sorry, I'm 15 minutes late. I don't think this has ever happened in my 3.5 year career, but I won't commit hari kari. I'm actually moving. I got a COVID eviction. One of the few people in Canadian history ever get evicted for breaking the COVID rules. In fact, I'll play a talk about that, and then we'll go from there. So I'm terribly sorry for being late. Well, I'll tell you the story of me getting evicted for COVID. This is just a short little video I just released days ago, about 12 minutes long, called Brian Roos Evicted from His Home for a COVID Violation. So just let me do the shared screen and sound here with Skype. Sorry, I'm being a bit flustered here. I was actually showing furniture and giving stuff away to people, and I lost track of the time, which is kind of a natural thing you might expect. So I hope you'll forgive me and not derail my career with Revolution Radio over being moved by the evil forces. Okay, folks, now I will play this talk for you. Here we go.
This is the Brian Roos Show on June 17, 2021. I'm being evicted from my home for COVID violations. This is a co-eviction. In all of Canadian history, December the 11th, fine me for $230 if they want, but I didn't think this affects my tenancy. He said, well, it is a law, and I didn't think it was actually a law. But he didn't give me a warning. He didn't give me a verbal warning or a written warning. And then on February 25th, 2021, he gives me a notice of eviction, and I challenged it $230 if they want, disputed it, and on June the 8th, just last week,
I didn't think it was actually
we
law.
Had the meeting with the adjudicator, and I thought I would win, but I lost, so now I'm evicted from my home. I've got boxes, I've got a dolly there, and the adjudicator gave me and my roommate just 22 days to leave by June 30th. So this is shocking and settling. I was going to ask you for more donations, but I actually found a place. Like a few days ago, I didn't know if I'd even have a place, but I found another place. It's adequate for June 30th, so I got a place to go. But if it's ever a good time, you can donate to the Brian Roux Show now. You can go to brianroux.ca, click on the donate button. It's linked below this video. You can donate there because there's always costs involved in moving. I'll certainly be telling you more details about this in future videos, but I want to show you the actual adjudicator's decision. The email to me, it's pages long, so I'll actually read it for you now on my my share screen. So this is the actual decision by the Residential Tenancy Branch. That's the branch of the provincial government of British Columbia who decides on tenancies. Here we go. So this is it. It says British Columbia Dispute Resolution Services, Residential Tenancy Branch, Office of Housing and Construction Standards, file number 91003-1252. In the matter of the Residential Tenancy Act between Brian Roux tenant application and then the landlord. So I'll scroll down here. Here it says decision. I'll just scroll down to the meaningful parts here. I'll just read parts of this here. It says background evidence. The parties agreed that a month-to-month tenancy began on July 1st, 2005. So jumping down, it says the tenant confirmed that they were served with a one-month notice A on February the 25th, 2021. One-month notice A is dated February 21st, 2021, and alleges a total of three causes as follows. One, tenant or person permitted on the property by a tenant has significantly interfered with or unreasonably disturbed another occupant or the landlord. Two, tenant or person permitted on the property by a tenant has seriously jeopardized the health or safety of lawful right of another occupant or the landlord. Three, tenant or person permitted by the tenant has put the landlord's property at significant risk. So I denied all of these. The agent, this is the building manager, attached a letter to 1 month notice A, which sets out the time and dates of the 14 events that prompt the landlord to issue the 1 month notice A. The second incident states the following. On December 11th, 2020, at 7 p.m., tenant had four non-resident guests in his apartment for a few hours. This was mentioned to management by two other residents. The building manager reminded the tenant of the PHOs, which is the provincial health orders. This is with Dr. Bonnie Henry, our chief medical officer with the COVID rules. In addition, the notice also reads on page three, despite being warned by management several times, tenant continues to invite guests into the building and his apartment unit. This behavior is contrary to current provincial health orders, PHOs, which came to effect November 19, 2020. The PHOs state in part, no social gatherings of any size at your residence with anyone other than your household. Now, this is not true, and the adjudicator gave me no opportunity to discuss this. In fact, there was no discussion about this. He's just copying this from what the manager wrote. I didn't have any company after my one mistake on December 11, 2020, make one mistake, then I get evicted like 6 months later. So it says here, the agent stated that for multi-unit buildings, the PHO did not allow outside guests due to the COVID-19 pandemic rules in place at the time. The agent stated the building is 34 units and that the actions of the tenant place all other tenants at risk due to COVID-19 by having guests over, which violates the rules. The tenant admitted to breaking the provincial health order by having two guests over, but denied having four guests over. The agent stated that while they saw four guests over on that date and time, even with two guests over, the tenancy should end when the tenant violates a known provincial health order and risks the health of the agent and all other occupants. The tenant did not deny that they knew about the provincial health order in place. Actually, at the time, I felt that I said to the manager a week later, well, my understanding that the police could fine me $230, but I didn't think this affected my tenancy. And the manager said, well, it's the law, but actually, I don't think it is the law. And he did not warn me. He didn't give me a verbal warning that would affect my tenancy, and he didn't give me a written warning. The adjudicator gave me no opportunity to discuss this. Once he made a decision, he said that was it, but I said, but no, and he literally just hung up on me. It's a 35-minute call, even though we had many, many pages of documents. There were 61 pages of documents that landlord had, and I had about 25 in my defense. And he didn't go beyond the first page.
So at this point, it says in the writing, in the hearing, the parties were advised that I heard enough from the agent and tenant to find the 1 month notice A was valid. The tenant claims other tenants were also violating provincial health orders, which I stated was not relevant to this matter as I was only deciding the matter before and not in relation to other tenants in the building. So his analysis is based on the documentary evidence and the testimony provided by the parties during the hearing and on the balance of probabilities, I find the following. 1 month notice A, the tenant disputed the 1 month notice A within the 10-day timeline as provided under Section 47 of the Act. The onus of proof is on the landlord to prove that the 1 month notice is valid. Based on the tenant admitting that they broke the rules, and I was saying, now I understand it was breaking the rules. At that time, I didn't think it affected my tenancy. So broke the rules in reference to the provincial health order in place on December 11, 2020. I find that 1 month notice A is valid and that tenant has seriously jeopardized the health or safety of another occupant or the landlord. I find the tenant's behavior to be unreasonable by purposely violating a provincial health order by having two guests over in a 34 unit building during a pandemic, which I find puts all occupants and the agent at risk of contracting COVID-19. Also find that it was not necessary to consider the other 13 incidents listed in support of the 1 month notice or to consider 1 month notice B further. So on page 4, it says, based on the above, I find the landlord has met with the burden of proof and I dismiss the tenant's application in full without leave to reapply. I uphold the landlord's 1 month notice, Section 55 of the Act applies and states, order of procession for the landlord. 55, if a tenant makes an application for a dispute resolution to dispute the landlord's notice to end a tenancy, the director must grant to the landlord an order of possession of the rental unit if A, the landlord's notice to end tenancy complies with Section 52, form a consent of notice to end tenancy, and B, the director during the dispute resolution proceeding dismisses the tenant's application or upholds the landlord's notice. I have reviewed 1 month notice A and find that it fully complies with Section 52 of the Act. Accordingly, I grant the landlord an order of possession effective June 30th. This is 22 days after the meeting on June 8th. June 30th, 2021 at 1 p.m. That doesn't even give you a chance to go out on July 1st. As the parties confirm that money has been paid for use of occupancy for June 2021. I do not grant the filing fee as the tenant's application has failed. This is $100 I would have gotten refunded if I had won. Conclusion, the tenant's application is dismissed without leave to reapply. The tenancy ended on the effective vacancy date of the 1 month notice, which was March 31st, 2021. The landlord has been granted an order of possession effective June 30th, 2021 at 1 p.m. for the reason noted above. The order must be served on the tenant and may be enforced in the Supreme Court of British Columbia. The tenant can be held liable for all costs related to enforcement of the order of possession. This decision will be emailed to both parties. The order of possession will be emailed to landlord only for service on the tenant as required. So final page 5, this decision is final and binding on the parties, unless otherwise provided under the Act and is made on authority delegated to me by the director of the Residential Tenancy Branch under Section 9 of the Residential Act, dated June 8, 2021. This adjudicator, his name is Derek Tangedal, T-A-N-G-E-D-A-L. And when I phoned up some lawyers about it, they said, oh, Mr. Tangedal. Yeah, we know him. He'll just pick up on one mistake, one negative thing in the application, and he'll just reject it like that. So it's almost like the luck of the draw and I lost. So, and that's my share. When I phoned up some lawyers about it, they said,
I found a place,
Mr.
Put my money on it yesterday, so I feel a lot better now than I was last Tuesday. I think for about 4 or 5 days, I was losing sleep anxiety. But I've turned around now. You can see I'm still a bit shaken up. But I'll be okay. Don't worry. I've got really good friends helping me out this time. Good comments helping me out. It makes all the difference in the world. And just to know that you're out there. So I thought I should tell my audience what's going on. So I'm like a cat. I'll land on my feet. expect more videos to come, and I'll tell you more about this story later. So thanks for watching, folks, and please give me your best wishes. You've been a great audience, and now's the time to count on my friends, count on my comrades and audience. Thanks.
So that's the story in brief of me being evicted. I'm going to make more videos about this. And I'm going to have quite a thorough blog post about this because this is a story that's not going away. COVID and COVID eviction. So this is my story. So I'd like to go into detail. Right now, it's the bottom of the hour. I'm going to play a talk for you called The Higher Realm and UFO Direction, The Brian Ruse Show. What's interesting about this is it's 3 years old. So I got to compare this to my current UFO direction. Like, my interest now is in the gray alien agenda because I think it's a wholesome thing for humanity. When I recorded this 3 years ago, I knew a bit about it, but not as much, but still I'm in a similar direction. So this is kind of an historical video. So this is a 47-minute talk by myself. Here we go, folks. It's one of these videos that's so old, it might be slow to play because it's been sitting in BitChute for... for 3 years. I think there's lots of dust on this talk. And so I have a whole playlist of videos called Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations, which is one of my four major themes of my show. Is first, the UFO reality. Second, the truth about international Jewish power. The third, the truth about Adolf Hitler in Germany. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. But it seems this talk is not playing, which is not too shocking because it's on BitChute. We understand BitChute has these kind of limitations. Another recent limitation BitChute has is on June 1st, they changed their hate speech laws. Now, it's more in line with YouTube's hate speech laws, meaning if you hurt someone's feelings, you better watch out. So it affects my channel. If you have any advice, I'm looking for a new platform for more controversial videos in the future. On my Brian Ruse channel, I'll probably just have more my UFO-themed videos, which are not offensive. They're just weird. But for my videos about Jewish power and Adolf Hitler, I'm going to need a new platform. So send me email if you have any advice. My email is brian@brianruse.ca. That's brian@brianruse.ca. I'm going through my playlists here. I've got quite a few here. This is a kind of an interesting one. I have Brian Ruse interviews Patrick Fox on ancient aliens and aliens. So let's see if this one plays, because the other one's not playing. Aha! This one is playing. We're cooking with the gas, as they used to say. In the old-fashioned way. Here we go. Welcome to the Brian Ruse Show. It's May the 16th, 2018. My guest is playing. Is Patrick Fox. I'll read you a bit of a bio here from his website, is ancientaryans.com. So Patrick Fox is a pro-white journalist, radio personality, speaker, and political activist. He's born in the city of Dubai, United Arab Emirates, to European parents and raised in North Central Arkansas. Mr. Fox is contributing writer to the Barnes Review and the Renegade Tribune. He's appeared on witness and journalist media, Wolf Wall Street, The Realist Report, the T-Bear Radio, Coast to Coast AM, and many other white nationalist and mainstream talk shows. His mother was a Soviet citizen born and raised in St. Petersburg, Russia. His father was a college professor from Oxford. He was adopted as an 8-month-year-old baby boy on Wall Street, and his name was legally changed to Patrick Chulinard, and he wrote 3 books under this name. Talk shows. So Mr. Fox, his mother was a Soviet historian and political commentator. Jack Walsh was his mentor, who taught Patrick much about the white Aryan race and its long and successful history. Patrick's loyalties are to the white Aryan race first and foremost. He considers himself a cultural Christian, respectful of the role Christianity has played in the history of our race, how Christianity once solidified and united our people. However, he views Christianity in its current form a hindrance to our interests. He agrees with Ben Klassen, that our loyalties should be to what is beneficial to the white Aryan race. That which hinders our revolution and betterment should be rejected. He believes that far too often our loyalties are placed in people and institutions which are a distraction to the further evolution of our species. So Patrick, welcome to the show. It's good to have you on for the first time. Yeah, so Patrick, I want to ask you, why is our Aryan heritage and history so important?
Well, first of all, heritage, or any people's heritage, solidifies that society. It gives them a clear notion of where they've been, and from that standpoint, what they are about today and what the future holds. The Jews are worst enemy, noticed more than anything in the world, that tradition, heritage, and an idea of who we are is vital to their survival. And so we have lost that. In our society today, we are confronted with a plethora of alternative ideas promoting that Black heritage is so important. In fact, the Blacks have committed such wonders and such accomplishments as opposed to our race, which our children are taught did nothing but enslave Blacks, create colonialism, and kill 6 million Jews. So they get a distorted view of our heritage, about our history. Now, what I'm trying to do with ancient Aryanism is do much more than just talk about known history. I go back in an esoteric sense and try to regenerate the arcane wisdom of our ancestors. Yeah. This very act is what Heinrich Himmler and the Annenerbe were doing back in the 1930s. Yeah, yeah. The Annenerbe, they were trying to do just that. They were trying to reawaken a hidden knowledge. Now, when you watch Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, people get the impression, and in fact, academia and the media in Hollywood promote this idea, that the National Socialists in Germany, and specifically the Annenerbe, were going all around the globe trying to find arcane tools and weapons to rule the world. Now, this is the stuff of comic books. It's the stuff of fantasy. In reality, the Annenerbe was cutting edge in archaeology, generations ahead of what the United States and archaeologists in our country were doing, in Canada, in Great Britain. And so, you know, in a sense, they were kind of put off by this advanced German archaeology. After the war, they were discredited. And in that sense, that in fact, the symbol of the ancient Aryan society is the Odal rune and the Erminsul pillar. And that was the original symbol of the Annenerbe. So my work and my efforts basically pick up where the Annenerbe and Heinrich Himmler and the SS left off. I'm trying to generate an awareness for a people, a pride with our heritage and where we possibly could have started much, much more into the ancient past than is believed today.
Yeah, this is really fascinating between Annenerbe and I mean, I've really studied like advanced ancient civilizations that are probably, and I think the international Jews want to hide this from us because we're probably this great white history. Just think if there hadn't been a war and National Socialist Germany survived, they probably would have made all these tremendous discoveries we're just making in the last 10 years. It's probably about our Aryan history. So this is very fascinating. Tell us more.
Well, you know, it is, because the United States was busy, you know, just doing a few Native American excavations and basically covering up a lot of the evidence of a lost race of giants in the United States. While the Annenerbe was going to South America and making real discoveries of real importance. They weren't hiding anything. The Smithsonian were hiding the evidence. the Annan Urban was bringing it out and showing that, yes, Bolivia, Ecuador, they had ancient Aryan civilizations going back tens of thousands of years, if not longer.
Wow, that's fascinating. I have the book, Forbidden Archaeology, by Michael Kremo. Just show it for the audience here, right here. Yeah, he has amazing discoveries of ancient bones, millions of years old. And he's saying half the time when they make discoveries in archaeology, like in America and other places, they bury it. They were trying to hide it. He says there's a knowledge filtration system within archaeology. He doesn't say it's the international Jews that are doing this, but who else would have that power? I'm sure they're the ones behind it.
These are my first books.
Okay.
Forgotten Worlds and Lost Race of the Giants. This book discusses the mythology and ancient history of giants throughout time.
You can hold it up. You can hold the cover up to the camera a bit clearer, so you get your hand out of the way so people can read it. Okay, and not too close. Can you hold it back? Okay, yeah, you can show us the back of the book too. Yeah. Okay, very good. Yeah. Okay, Forgotten Worlds, from Atlantis to the Ex-Women of Siberia and the Hobbits of Flores. Okay, very good.
Now, I met Michael Kremo in 2011.
Oh.
And I had a couple meals with him. I had dinner with him twice and breakfast.
Good.
We discussed his theories. We discussed his theories and his findings. And the interesting thing about Michael Kremo is he uses this as guide. He wrote another book called Human Devolution.
Yeah.
And he bases his theories on the Vedas and the Sanskrit writings of India. Yeah. What's fascinating about him is because it's the Vedic scriptures and the scriptures of India, which are Hindu, which are Aryan, it's compatible with the pro-white viewpoint, because even though today you have swamis in mixed race population of India, it wasn't always so. It's like their paintings and that, the religious paintings that show really Indian-type people in their sculptural depictions look Asian. Those are recent. Those temples, those depictions are only several hundred years old. But the Aryan invasion was thousands of years ago, before they became a mixed population, and they found evidence of this. There's evidence that they were completely a Nordic population, at least the higher upper castes.
Wow.
Now, a lot of people poo-pooed the ancient Aryan invasion theory. However, recent science, they did a study in molecular biology. They did a recent study in England of the genetic population of India, and they found that in the north, that most of the lower castes had mostly Asian DNA in them, but the upper castes, the ones that would be the hierarchical positions for the Aryans, had the most European DNA in Asia, in all of England. And so as they go further down, when they did women DNA, they found that there was more Asian, but still they had women in the upper castes had more European DNA than any of the other women in any of the other castes. So this actually shows that this idea of an invading Aryan force was established as a racial caste system and was at the upper hierarchy of their society is in fact correct.
Makes sense, yeah. They're lighter skinned too, the higher castes.
Exactly, because they have more Aryan blood in them. And if you go further north, like towards the Himalayas, you will have pockets of Indians with red hair, blue eyes, green eyes, and fair skin.
Wow. Wow, look at that.
And so this is the reality. And you often hear the opponents of the ancient Aryan theory say, well, there really wasn't a blonde, blue-eyed Indo-European race. Well, there was, because take the Tocharians, for example, the blonde, red-haired mummies of China,
Western China. Wow.
Yeah, Western China and Takawan Desert. They were all Aryan-looking, and they spoke it. They had written language with them of an Indo-European tongue. Here are Indo-European-speaking peoples with Aryan, classic Nordic look. And so we know for a fact that this was a reality, that the ancient Indo-Europeans were blonde, blue-eyed, or red-haired.
But when were they in China? They dated those mummies in China?
Well, some of them, the most recent, go back 3,000 years. But there's other mummies that date back before that, 5,000, 6,000 to 8,000 years.
Because Chinese history, you have about 5,000 years of Chinese history of the Chinese. They probably don't mention white. So how would they be 3,000 years old? How does those dates mesh?
They do mention whites.
Ah,
they mention
that.
The Yuzi and the Wuzu are the two terms that they have for them. They call them yellow-haired barbarians who were supposedly in the West causing problems, and it gave them a very negative look because they didn't want to admit to the fact that it was these Aryans who gave them bronze weapons, who gave them the domesticated horse, who gave them the first chariot to their country. They don't want to admit that the basis of their civilization, the most important rudiments of Chinese civilization, were given by Aryans. In fact, their legends speak of the sun gods, and the sun gods are depicted as having blonde hair and blue eyes.
Wow. So yeah, you can see the cultural competition there.
Yeah, you can see when they have these legends of pyramids. You hear a lot in the New Age camp about Chinese pyramids.
You know, I was there. I actually saw pyramids in China. I was in Guiyang 2 years ago. I took videos of pyramids. It's amazing.
You see, with the Chinese pyramids, is they didn't hide them because they were evidence of UFOs or ancient aliens. They hid them because they're associated with the sun gods, the blonde, blue-eyed master race which established Chinese civilization. So they know that if they have people starting to ask questions and investigations further, it'll look like China doesn't have a hold on its own history because it's borrowed. And it borrows to this day. Every segment of sophisticated technology that the Chinese have today, they borrowed from Western countries.
So they got their technology from the whites. So the whites predated, built the pyramids in China, and the Chinese got it from the whites.
They did a study, and it was documented in molecular biology. In molecular biology, a reputable journal of genetics and biology, they found out that genetically, if you go far back into the history of Chinese genetics, you will find a lot of Caucasian or Nordic strains in their DNA, because at one time, 8,000, 10,000 years ago, the predominant race in China was the white race, and that there was about 3,000 to 4,000 years ago, there was a fundamental shift in transformation of their society from white to Mongoloid. And this is actually very fascinating because it's not coming from a white nationalist publication. It's coming from molecular biology, which is reputable and produced by otherwise Marxist universities. So they themselves.
That's impressive. That's really impressive. Yeah.
And also, recently, back in 2005, CNN covered a story which depicted a Caucasian throwback in China. It's a girl born in China of two Mongoloid parents who exhibited distinct Caucasian characteristics.
Oh, it's in her genes.
It was a throwback.
Wow.
And if those genes were in that society from ancient times, that would not have happened. So it's evidence of a previous population in China that was Aryan.
And they mixed together. Wow.
Exactly.
That's astonishing.
Came by the name of Philip Jones with a bachelor's degree, and he wrote a book, Racial Hybridity, which was published back in the 1970s. He pointed out that the Chinese are actually a mixed population, a white, black, and some, and that's what he said, it was a mixture of white and Negroid peoples.
There's black? You don't see the black in the Chinese.
Well, it's because they have so much white in them.
Yeah.
If you look at, in Africa, there is a population in Africa which looks so Chinese. It has high yellow skin and has the emphatic fold, which is the slanted eye characteristic that we associate with Asians. And I believe it was this race that went to China and Asia during the period that the whites were there. And when that population of Africans got there, over the next 2,000 years, they interbred. Now, one thing you have to understand, it's not like today where you would have to have hundreds of people coming to interbreed. The populations back then were very, very small. Yeah. It only took a few intermixture to change the gene pool of a population.
Interesting.
So that's a significant thing. That's why people say, oh, yeah, we're all mixed. Well, no, not really. You might have one or two mixtures, and that shows up in your DNA. But, you know, they use that, they misrepresent it to the white population and try to make it sound like, oh, we were always mixed. The white race has always been the purest race on the planet. It has done the least amount of intermixture. And it's always been in its inner soul not to mix. And so even today with the enormous amount of propaganda encouraging miscegenation, white women, on the whole, choose not to mix across races.
And
when I do see intermixture, it's always with these fat, big-ass women, white women, with the blonde hair. They have the big, fat faces. You never see gorgeous Aryan women with the blacks, unless it's in Hollywood and there's money to be had.
Yeah, that's a Jewish agenda of miscegenation.
Yeah, and the woman will go with the black in if he's an athlete or something, or they will go a little bit to experiment to see what it's like to be with a non-white. But on the whole, white women are loyal.
Yeah, I think there's just as many white Americans now as there were in 1960, with millions of whites, probably even more whites now than there was 60 years ago.
The difference is that the population of non-whites has gotten larger.
Yeah, the percentage has gone from 90% to like 60%, yeah. Well, I'm interested in the advanced ancient civilizations, like we know about 12,800 years ago, comet fragments hit the north and wiped out an advanced ancient civilization. So with regard to China, you're saying even after that happened, there was no whites, or they're dominant, or many in China. And I'm thinking before that, when there's evidence of an advanced ancient civilization, like with pyramids in China, pyramids all over the world. So it's probably the whites that were dominant with this advanced culture, and they're probably in China with these pyramids, which are probably used for power generator or something like that, right?
Yes, that's very correct. In fact, the ground zero for these comet impacts was North America.
Yep.
And that goes back to when there was the Salutrians, the white populations that came from northern France.
Yep.
Northern Spain, the Salutrians who came across the ice shelf 20,000 years
across
ago.
The Atlantic, 20,000 years ago, yeah. But we should tell that for the audience. Most people don't know about that because, of course, our Jewish-controlled educational system will suppress that and say, oh, the whites took the lands from the Indians, but we were here first.
Yeah, exactly. And so when they got here, they established a civilization, but the comet pretty much ended it. And so there was a substantial amount of white population left over from this disaster, but that's when the fake Clovis people, the so-called Native Americans, came across the Bering Strait and they wiped them out. What evidence is there of this? Well, part of that evidence comes from their own mythology. They said that when they were created, they woke up and they looked around and realized they were not alone. There were yellow-haired and red-haired beings of great stature and sophistication. So what did they do? They admitted themselves, they slaughtered them, and they took their women and their children as slaves. Now, the interesting thing is you have ancient aliens, for example, is always interviewing these Native Americans, and they have all these stories about sky people, okay, and aliens. Well, they're only doing that because, you know, they know they're gonna be paid money to be interviewed about this. But you see, before this ancient alien phenomenon came about, there was a consensus among Native American mythologies. I'll call them Indian, by the way. Indian mythology that states that there were beings from across the sea who were light-skinned, and that it was light-skinned peoples and light-skinned sky people who were coming to the earth and teaching them the rudiments of their culture and civilization. That was the predominant viewpoint, our story given, the archetype, by Native Americans.
And you said from across the sea. That means across the Atlantic to Europe.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Wow, that's really meaningful.
From across the sea. Across Europe to the New World and gave them everything they knew.
Well, can you tell the audience some sources for this, or other authors you read on this?
There's a lot of sources. You can, to get this an idea of this, you can either look at my books, Forgotten Worlds or Lost Races of the Giants. You can go on my website, www.ancientaryans.com. You can search, there's tons of authors. By Frank Joseph, there was Prehistoric America, I think it was, or something or other. Just type in Frank Joseph. There's tons of material. Go on Inner Traditions website. That was my former publisher. They have a lot of material there. And if you're interested, you can look at Prehistoric America, like Ancient Aliens, and just give it this perspective that this is not entirely true, but it reveals a lot of the accomplishments made by our race. Because, you know, you just say to yourself, no, ancient aliens didn't do this, ancient whites did.
Yeah, that maybe they're being misleading. I think also the evidence
so
of having
advanced really,
ancient human civilization more advanced than we are now, we don't need aliens. So they could have just been more advanced than pyramids.
Correct.
Maybe had their own flying saucers. Who knows what that? But it's not necessarily any need for aliens from outer space. We could have just been more advanced. And that seems more realistic and down to earth in a sense.
Yeah, and the show is only giving, you know, if you look between all the muck that they put out there, you can get an idea that like I was saying, that no, aliens didn't do this. It was these great accomplishments by whites, because we are, I will say without a doubt, the best race that ever lived on the earth.
Oh, and, thank you, Patrick.
And we're very ancient, and we're very powerful and insightful people. And people downgrade us and make us look like we don't have culture. There's a class that college that teaches that the white race is actually a deformation, that we're all deformed, that we're not supposed to look this way.
Yeah.
And here's what I care what we look like, but they don't even mention our enormous intellectual capacity.
Yeah, and our accomplishments in medicine, engineering. I should also mention, I'm a Buddhist teacher, and the Buddha was Aryan. He had blue eyes but black hair. He was Indian, like light skin, golden skin. And the Buddha said he taught the Aryan path, the Aryan way, you know. And he came from the warrior caste, you know. I just wanted to mention that. So, and also, we know the international Jews have a very deep hatred for the white European Christian race and society. So they're doing all they can in society and media to degrade us and to slander us and to, you know, to criticize the whites all they can and to hide our history.
Yeah. And, you know, pyramids, you know, I mean, you said before the show you want, you know, something you want to ask me about pyramids.
Well, the fact that it's advanced ancient technology and that they're probably some type of power generator. If you study the one that's well known in Egypt, it seems to be the inside is meant for generating electricity and getting power from the earth or from the stars or whatever. Just what? What's your theory on that?
You know, there was a Russian company that actually started building pyramids in the 1980s.
Time for break, folks. See you in a few minutes, or you'll hear me. Thanks, folks.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine.
There was blood on the wire.
Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire.
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey guys, Scorpio here. Join me every Saturday at 2 p.m. here on Studio A for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show, where we discuss the hidden agendas that impact our lives and uncover the secret societies and the shadowy elite who construct the reality that we are supposed to believe. So be there Saturdays, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, here on Studio A on Revolution Radio, and learn what's really going down.
Lost a little honey on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution. Radio!
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back. Brian Rue Show for Hour 2 for Tuesday, June 22nd, 2021. This is the first show of the summer. Oh my gosh, we should have a celebration. And a gorgeous summer it is here in Vancouver. It doesn't usually get too hot. It's probably about 80 degrees for you Americans. In Canada, it'd be about 24 degrees Celsius. So I'm a happy camper, even though I've been evicted from my home after 16 years for the COVID violation. I had a couple of friends over on December the 11th, and it took them 6 months to evict me. How compassionate. So you can hear the story in the video I just played the first hour. It's on my BitChute channel. Go to BitChute.com. Look for the Brian Rue channel, R-U-H-E. You can also find me on my website, BrianRue.ca. And remember, Revolution Radio is totally listener-supported, so send in your donations. You can go to our website at revolution.radio or freedomslips.com. You can send a donation through your credit card online. It's quite convenient. So in this hour, I'm going to continue on my last talk with Patrick Fox, called Brian Rue Interviews Patrick Fox on Ancient Aryans and Aliens Around the World. So I'll carry on with that where we left off, folks. Here we go.
And in the beginning, the Soviets themselves were commissioning these pyramids to be built.
There's hundreds
of pyramids in the former Soviet Union, created by the government for this purpose to generate energy. And they put all kinds of things there. They put different types of bacteria, under a pyramid. They found that the minute they put the pyramid up, that there was less electricity flowing through the inside of the pyramid. And so a lot of this, is just like the obelisks are power generating units, which created a world grid. You know, it's not just the ley lines, it's this world grid that gives these pyramids significance because they shoot up energy and they connect all around the world.
Yeah, I think the idea, and there's YouTube videos about this, shows these ancient pyramids might have had electricity going from one pyramid 1,000 miles away to another pyramid, like Nikola Tesla's idea of wireless electricity. So why do you think archaeologists are hiding this from us? Why are they sticking to this old idea that pyramids are just tombs for pharaohs? There's never any evidence for that. I mean, why do you think they're giving us this story and they're not telling us the truth?
And the answer to that is that the universities are Marxist now. Okay, back in before the 1940s, before the Frankfurt School was created in the United States, actually moved over from Germany, there was a lot of study of this. There was a lot of openness. But once Marxism infiltrated the American academic system, it stopped because all the main professors and everybody was Jew. So the Jews are the ones who are suppressing this through the educational system. That's one thing the anti-paradigm movement, the ancient mysteries experts don't understand. It's not some inclandestine establishment that's preventing research on many of these topics. It's the Jews. If you look throughout history on anything that comes across anti-white or tyrannical, it's the Jews. And the Jews are the source of our grief. And we need to realize that as a society, as a white society, because if we don't understand the enemy's going to swallow us whole.
Yeah, you're right. It's like we're firing at paper tanks. If we don't identify the enemy, we think, the enemy is, the universities or whatever. We're firing at paper tanks. That's a line from Dr. E. Michael Jones. You're right. We have to keep reminding people, raising awareness of that.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I'm really fascinated with the whites in China and in North America. Where else have the whites have been? Or you can talk more about China. That's very powerful historic information to me. It's very meaningful.
The Pacific is another example of where ancient whites or ancient Aryans were involved. In New Zealand, they have legends of red-haired giants. They have legends of small, blonde, little people in the forests. And even the third race, more human-like, Aryan-type peoples who came to the islands generations, if not thousands of years, before the Moai came.
Wow.
Yeah, and they had these legends to this day. And the Moai believe these stories, and there are New Zealanders, Moai, who have blonde hair and blue eyes. And their genetics, when they tested their genetics, you know where they ended up?
Sweden or Norway?
India. In northern India, that DNA goes back 3,000 years. Now, if you go back 3,000 years, you're going back to the Aryan invasion. So you could might as well have it, Norway. Those were pure Aryans back then.
Wow, so you're saying these people made their way to New Zealand 3,000 years ago and their genes mixed with the modern-day Moai.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. That is powerful. Holy smoke. So I wonder if there's any pyramids in New Zealand. I wonder if they discovered anything there.
They had megaliths in New Zealand.
Yeah, I heard about one archaeologist's career. People were even threatened with death about not revealing about megaliths in New Zealand because it destroys their theory that around 800 AD or something, the Moai arrived there. There's people there much older than that. Do you want to talk a bit about the megaliths?
Yeah, the megaliths, I don't know too much about them, but they are less distinct than the megaliths of Stone Age and Karnak in Europe. They are boulders that were basically brought into the site and kind of touched up and put in different positions all around the island.
Wow.
But when you first look at them, you think they're naturally selected, that they just happen to be there. But when you look at them and then kind of do the little bit where you're seeing how they're shaped and how they're set into place, it's clear that it was ancient Aryans who put it there.
Wow, that's very impressive. So you're saying it could be at least 3,000 years old.
It could be older than that. They don't know exactly when those megaliths were actually put into place. There's no way to date them, which is interesting, too, because there's no way to date any of these megaliths around the world unless you have some form of biology, some remains, like antlers, human remains, that you can date. But it does, just because it's there doesn't mean that they are contemporaneous with the cutting and hewing of the stones. One of the things too is that two things is as far as carbon dating, there is this idea that carbon dating is an infallible way of dating ancient remains. However, if there is radiation in the atmosphere, if the composition of the atmosphere is different, then the results will be different. Because we have this way of atmosphere today doesn't mean that 6,000 years ago the atmosphere wasn't different. So what could be maybe say 3,000 years old might actually be 30,000 years old. They did a form of chlorine 24 dating, which is a new form of dating used to find when stones were cut and quarried. It turns out that Stonehenge actually dates back to 35,000 BC, and that's the beginning of the white race. At least
35,000 BC in Stonehenge. That's really powerful.
Yeah.
I believe it. Like Göbekli Tepe, we know is about 11,500 years old.
Wow. Well, it might be older too, because the dating might be wrong.
Yeah, it might be older. You know, I mean, I was reading about the Bosnian pyramid. They can't date the stones, but they found a leaf between two bricks, and it was dated something like 26,000 or 33,000 years old. You want to talk about the Bosnian pyramid?
Yeah, the Bosnian pyramid was discovered by same as Magnich.
Yeah, around 2005. So they've known about it for a long time. And of course, the mainstream media and archaeologists don't want to discuss it, but they've been digging around for 13 years there.
Yeah, and they don't want to discuss it, I think, because it places Europe in prominence when it comes to pyramids.
Yep.
That's the only reason. It's kind of funny because it's okay for non-whites to have culture and civilization.
Yeah, like black culture.
But we're not supposed to have that. We're supposed to be only a few hundred years old in our culture and civilization. And it's okay for non-whites to influence us, but that's science. But if someone comes up with a theory that says whites influence the primitive non-white race.
Well, then we're oppressors and we're colonizers and we're enslavers, right? If we influence them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We were the devil. We were the devil.
It's all slander. It's all slandering the white race by the Jewish establishment.
Exactly. And they're the ones that prop up these professors and that. You know, I've seen Ancient Aliens. There was a professor, I forget his name. He was the one that got taped saying that we need to exterminate white people. Do you remember that?
No.
He had about Ancient Aliens talking about ancient culture.
Yeah.
And you know, this guy, Jason Calavito, who criticized my writings, his main theme is anything that is white, he attacks. Well, there's reasons for this. First of all, he's a non-white, a total non-white. He's Hispanic and Jewish. And secondly, this idea that all culture must come from the non-white is an idea which time has come to end. We need to be standing up as white people to support our culture, our future, and our civilization.
Yeah, look at like 80% of inventions, science, medicine.
All of our authors.
Yeah, look at technology, engineering, medicine. 80-90% of everything was created from the European culture, European white race. Like, just look at all the inventions that everyone in the world benefits from.
Yeah, and people are forgetting that. You know, we are truly the saviors of the world. Without us, it's like when Hitler said, if the Aryan is moved from the equation, the world will become a desert.
Yeah, we should be proud of our history and our compliments instead of having white guilt, you know, dumped on us all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, the ancient stuff really is powerful to me because it also leads to free energy. I think they must have learned free energy from the pyramids, which they've been hiding. I think I read that around. There's a book by Barnes Review about the ancient pyramids and the lies about it. In like 1832, there was inscriptions that they faked in the pyramids to make it look like they're used for mummies, but they just made this up. They weren't for mummies because they probably the Masons or the Jews knew this was something used for power. And secret knowledge, like on the Masons having the dollar bill, the pyramid and the capstone, they probably knew something about the pyramids for hundreds of years. And they were keeping it from us.
Well, Nikola Tesla was talking about free energy in his day. And I'm watching that new show. I hate to advocate the History Channel, but watching the Tesla files. And, I'm learning more about Tesla through that. I never was one to study him. I just got a book about him from the library. It's actually, it's a shame because he had in his research and inventions, he had the ability to give us all free energy.
I think so, yeah.
Unlimited, across the world, across the board. And people say, the guys on the show say, I wonder why it was covered up. Again, the Jews, they benefit from this system that we have to pay for energy. We have to pay to drive our cars. We need the petroleum.
Yeah, they want to put a meter on it. That's right.
If we had what Tesla offered us, we could have had free energy. We could have had cars running on free power. We have a totally different society today. We wouldn't have to be working our ass off to pay the electricity bills, utilities.
Just think what we could do with free energy and the food we could feed people. Yeah, the 20th century has been called the lost century because of that. We could have gone much further than we actually did.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it was the Aryans who developed that. So probably the ancient Aryans had the same thing, and the international Jews are desperate to hide this from us, right? Like, so much is coming out with the internet, so much information. It's like an embarrassment of riches. Like, how can they hide it now? So much knowledge is out there about, like, pyramids, ancient, like, monoliths all over the world. You want to talk more about that?
You know, in my new book, Ancient Aryans, I opened the book by discussing Andrew Jackson and how he championed the idea of a lost race who built the mounds out of the Hopewell civilization and the Anasazi. And I take it one step further. I show how he was the forerunner of recognizing the Solutrean theory.
Wow.
Even knowing the specifics, he was the one championing the idea that a prehistoric white race once existed in North America prior to the coming of the Mongoloids.
And what decade was he? Was he the 1830s?
Yes.
Very good. President, right?
He promoted white archaeology and displaced the Indians and grow them out. Now, he's getting a lot of bad flack for that today because political correctness says he was, you know, nothing more than a war criminal, in a sense, responsible for the Trail of Tears, as they call it. But essentially, no, because in historically speaking, it was the Indians who initiated the conflict. The true Native Americans, the white race, just wanted to come in and settle and establish a new nation. It was the Indians who wanted it exclusively their own domain. That's often misrepresented in history that, they wanted all the land for themselves, the whites, those bastards. They wanted everything for themselves and they didn't care about the Indians. The Indians were aggressive. They're brutal and savage, and removing them from the Southeast was actually a good thing, and it allowed our culture and our civilization and our nation to flourish for 100 years before the liberals and the Jews ruined it.
Yeah, I read about how savage the Native Indians were. Like, they would capture a white woman, they would slowly torture them, like put their foot on a fire and slowly, inch by inch, burn it over a fire for a day. So if a woman went out to the well to get water, she would take her gun and she would save the last bullet for herself, because the Indians would torture and, like, torture by fire the settlers, whereas we wouldn't do that to them. They were just savage. And our history books erase this from our memory, that their Jewish-controlled history erases this to make them look like the victims.
And see, that's what I'm trying to do in my books. I'm trying to show that our race is not just some aggressor that has no morals or virtues. It's like that film, Dances with Wolves. I think did a complete disservice to our people. You know, because people bought into that story of the innocent, peaceful, ecologically sound Native Americans brutal, anti-ecological and racist whites.
Yeah. It's constant Jewish media lies, right?
Exactly. And they are the synagogue of Satan. You know, they really are, as Andrew Carrington Hitchcock has said.
Yeah, a fan just sent me the book a few weeks ago. I have it here.
Yeah, it's a good book.
Yeah. This is very good. Yeah, what else would you like to cover?
UFOs?
Yeah, I have a big serious interest in UFOs. Like I do believe there definitely probably were ancient aliens. I'm just saying they weren't necessary to have an ancient civilization. But yeah, let's talk about UFOs. I think they're definitely for real. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll preface that with what you just said.
Okay.
Bring up UFOs, and I'll say the thing about the ancient aliens. We didn't need them to create our civilization, but they might have come.
Yeah, there's two dominant theories of UFOs, which I believe that some might be actual physical spaceships from other planets. Others could be beings from other realms, like higher realm beings. Like in Buddhist cosmology, we have devas, angels. The Buddha even said they can take on whatever physical form they want. So these are two dominant streams of UFOs, because some UFOs seem to change in shape or seem to be orbs, and some are actual physical aliens. The Buddha even described Nagas, which are reptilians, and the Buddha described that these Naga reptilians can take on human form if they want. We'll start with that.
Okay. Of course, there's UFOs, and I believe that there could have been ancient aliens, but what I don't believe is that we needed ancient aliens to create our whole civilization,
or that
they took away the supremacy of the white race in the Articles of History. But there's a lot of theories about UFOs today, about what they're doing to this planet and if they are real or not. I believe that there are a number of races of UFOs and aliens coming to this planet.
Yeah, I think so.
I believe they're the Aryan extraterrestrials, because in the Amara Indians, the Inca tribes in Mexico speak of Caucasian-like beings coming from the sky. So we know that there is a lot of legends, too, that depict these Aryan visitors from beyond the stars. I also believe that that there are aliens today, possibly the Greys, and I'd say it was the Greys from their activities, because the Greys seem to be parasites. And there's no other parasite other than the Grey than the Jew. So I think the Greys and the Jews are one of the two powers on Earth that are together in this struggle.
I agree. I think the Greys are working with the Jews, and the reptilians work with the Greys. And it could be, like the Buddha described from the Nagas, that it's not all bad, but it could be like one negative species or type of reptilians and five good ones. But I think some negative reptilians are working with the Greys, and they're working with the Jews, perhaps through the Rothschilds. There's a hierarchy of power, I think, through the elite international Jews like the Rothschilds and the reptilians and the Greys. I think they're all working together. I just want to get your view on that.
Yeah, I do. And I think that back in the 1930s, there was Jan von Helsing, in his book, Secret Societies, talks about this. There was a crash in Germany, in Freiburg, and there was also a development of a weapon known as the Glocke. A lot of people think they were developing a form of anti-gravity spacecraft. I believe that the Glocke was the craft that landed in Freiburg, Germany in the 1930s, and it was the Germans who were trying to either re-engineer it or activate it and use it as a whole spacecraft to use for their purposes. And they later were able to get in it and fly away.
Wow. So what did it look like? Was this the Bell one? We've seen the Bell shape.
Yeah, the Glocke, or the Bell in German, that's exactly what it was. I don't believe they developed it. You know, there's not that much literature on it other than diagrams and pictures in that one henge where they tested it, that's in Poland now, that was once part of Germany. I believe that was the original Bell. I think the Bell was the original craft that landed in Freiburg. And then later on in 1969, there was a crash in Pennsylvania.
I think it was December 9th, 1965, when the Keck's were Pennsylvania Bell. Yeah, 65. And they even described the same hieroglyphs on it, like a group of children and adults saw it first before the military arrived and said, you didn't see any of this, clear out, you know, but they described the same kind of writings and hieroglyphics that the Germans had. So it seemed to be the same thing. It seemed like maybe the Americans were testing it in a kind of crash land and civilians, witnesses saw it.
That could have been.
It seems like the Americans got a hold of it and they're testing it.
I think it's been the same thing all along. I think that was the craft that landed in Freiburg. That was the craft they were testing in Poland, and possibly that's the craft they were using after von Braun and the SS officers and scientists made it to the United States in Operation Paperclip.
Wow, could be. But what do you think of the view that Maria Orsek, their Golden Girl Challenger with the Thule Society in Germany, that she channeled down flying saucer designs? Maybe this is a separate thing, that she would channel down designs of, you know, flying saucers. Do you think the Bell and the Glock or something separate from that?
Yes, because the Germans, they assembled all kinds of flying saucers. The idea of this vortex engine was created by a man by the name of Schauberger.
Yeah, so there's YouTube videos on this, I should mention. Must be a 10 YouTube videos on this, with Victor Schauberger as well.
He's exactly. And the spacecraft that were developed by the Germans that looked like UFOs, I think they were then taken by the United States and the Soviet Union and further modified, and many, if not a great majority of the UFOs people see are actually American descendants of the original UFOs taken by the Allies at the end of the war, at the end of World War II.
Yeah, I think that could be.
And Henry Stevens, the author, wrote a whole book on it.
Yeah, I remember Maria Orsak, towards the end, she said everybody is leaving and we don't know what happened. Like, where'd they go? Where'd they go to Antarctica? Or I really don't know where they would have went. So, any last thoughts on UFOs? I agree with you. It's a mystery to me. It's hard to be sure, but I think the Germans definitely had something and the Allies wanted to get whatever they could from them. Yeah.
Yes, and my final idea about UFOs is I believe the possibility of extraterrestrial life as well as extraterrestrials on this planet now and in the ancient past is a very real reality. But something in me just can't discount the tremendous authority of ingenuity and strength that the Aryan race has shown. And I can't part with the idea that our race did nothing and the ancient aliens did everything. In fact, I can even say that the ancient aliens, the ones who created this lost civilization, were of the Aryan type, if they were in fact the ones who created it.
Yeah, the white Nordics, and probably this Jewish-owned History Channel is probably trying to discount white accomplishments by crediting everything to the ancient aliens.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, it was great having you on the show, Patrick. We'll have to do this again. We'll have to carry on. I'd love to have you on again. Thank you very much for joining me.
All right. You're my pleasure.
Okay, see you next time. Okay, folks. That was Patrick Fox. Hope you enjoyed that. So I got another older video now from 2018 with Pete Papa Heracles. I got a whole playlist called Pete Papa Heracles. Go to my BitChute channel on BitChute.com. This video is called Who is Suppressing the Truth About UFOs and Ancient Advanced Global Civilizations with Pete Papa Heracles. And please remember, Revolution Radio is totally listener supported, so send in your donations to keep this battling. Okay, here is the Godfather, Pete Papa Heracles.
That has been called the angelic realm, the satanic realm, the UFO realm. You know, an energy is there, although we don't see it.
Keep this,
but it's
battle,
there.
Battle.
So what makes it visible to us is the question. Thank you.
So I know within ufology, I don't know anybody who's really naming the Jew. I was at a conference here, and I know Richard Dolan. He stayed at my place here in 2014. We talked about the Jewish connection and Adolf Hitler and stuff. He never discusses it publicly. Like Richard Dolan has these YouTube live streams sometimes every day. He's one of the world's most famous ufologists, but he never discusses the Jew. So I feel I can make a video commenting on what he's saying about his whole thing is about government secrecy and disclosure. You know, disclosure and government secrecy. That's YouTube. Live stream, studying this for 20 years, and he's a real scholar. So I feel like I could take his videos and say, well, when Richard Dolan says this, the elephant in the living room he's not discussing is Jewish power, ladies and gentlemen. So I can take
fill in blanks, right?
Yeah, and I can take sections of other ufologists' videos, and I can even get ufologists on my talk show and confront them directly with a question and see what they say, and only go as far as they want to because they have publishers that are Jewish publishers, and they have. Some of them have day jobs, you know, so I don't want to put them on the spot too much. But I'm trying to bring this elephant in the living room more, with, say, within ufology. And also, you know, in advanced ancient history, Dr. Samir in Bosnia, the most famous Bosnian, you know, working, discovering the pyramid of Bosnia, he agreed to be on my show. I emailed their website. I said, could somebody come on my show? And he personally emailed me back. Said, sure, I'll come on your show. And I even mentioned, you know, I discussed the Jewish issue of suppressing ancient history. He said, sure, I can come on my show. But then he never followed up on my email. I said, okay, let's pick a date, you know, and he never followed up.
I have him on my Skype connections. I've been on Skype with him.
Really?
Dr. Ostanovich, something like that.
It's Samir Ostanovich. He calls himself Sam so people can pronounce it better.
Exactly. Somebody introduced me to him many years back, and we got on Skype there, and we talked for a while, and I was going to write an article for the Barnes Review on the Bosnian Pyramid, and I researched it, and we kind of talked about it with a couple of the guys there involved with the Barnes Review, and I was supposed to call him back and interview him and ask him this question and that question, and I never got around to it, but I'll tell you, I had a little bit of a problem with the whole thing, which is, and if I called him back, maybe I would have insulted him with my questions. I don't know, you know, so I just let it go. He claims that the Bosnian pyramid is bigger than the Gaza pyramid.
Yeah, 30% bigger.
Right. And he shows these things, artifacts that were found in these tunnels that... go underneath these rocks that seem like they were shaped by humans rather than, you know, nature. And all this proof that something was going on here with this pyramid. But then he says that it's a pyramid like Giza, sort of, but that all this shrubbery has grown over the centuries and you can't see it. But you see the shape of the mountain, it looks like it's pretty much like a pyramid. And you're like, well, how hard would that be to determine for real? After 20 years, you would think that...
Yeah, I think 2005, it's been 13 years. But they have dug into it. Like, you can see the bricks, like 90-degree bricks.
No, they're not bricks like that. They're walkways that they found, okay? Not bricks in the sense of the Great Pyramid. So maybe the mountain itself was shaped kind of like a pyramid shape, and they... you know, using the mountain as a basic structure, they built tunnels and did some other things. I get that. But that it's a pyramid where its weight structure is based on like a million granite stones, like the Giza pyramid, weighing 20 tons each, something like that, I don't see how it could be. Okay, and I don't see how difficult it would be to get to the bottom of the matter without waiting 13 years. Take a bobcat all the way to the top and start digging. Okay, just dig 5-10 feet until you find rock, which would be the stone of the pyramid. So just it, yeah, maybe to dig out the whole thing, maybe many years worth of work. But to establish whether there's like rock built by people, a stone building underneath, shouldn't be that hard. Even with a shovel and a a pick, you could do it.
Yeah, I know what I was saying, but I thought they've done that. I thought you've seen, like, whether they're molds or boulders, but I think they said that they found, you can't date rock, but they found a leaf between two rocks, carbon dated at 33,000 years old. There's a lot of videos on it, you know.
My problem is, I don't believe that the structure of this pyramid-shaped mound is really a stone structure underneath it, like the Great Pyramid. And it would be very easy to determine that by just clearing a few feet of dirt at the top that has built around it. It's not 1,000 feet of dirt.
But even at the bottom, they could.
But an amount of dirt.
But have you seen the videos? There's like hundreds of videos on this. They have dug around the bottom.
I've seen the videos. I have not seen a video that shows me the same profile of the top of a stone pyramid like Giza. I have not seen any of those unless they've done a lot of excavations the last couple of years.
Yeah, as far as I know, they haven't done the top. I have the same question. Why not do the top unless the government prevents them from doing the top? I don't know.
Well, that's what I was thinking, if the government prevents them. But I didn't hear that from the archaeologist.
But can't you tell from the bottom whether it's artificial or not? Shouldn't it be straightforward enough to tell whether they're artificial blocks rather than just natural?
Yeah, you see a mountain that looks perfectly, the sides look like a pyramid. You're like, this got to be a real pyramid, like Giza underneath. Well, why not actually dig a part that would conclusively prove the easiest thing would be to be the top. You see the top coming to an apex, take a couple of bobcats up there and remove the dirt, you know, a couple of truckloads of dirt, see how far down you got to dig until you get to the rock.
But they have done that at the bottom. It's easier to reach the bottom than without a road to get to the top. But they've already dug it. You can see videos of them digging near the bottom.
Yeah, but what I've seen near the bottom is walkways made of, like, you know, 4-inch thick stone by whatever. Okay, but not 20-ton boulders like we see at Giza. It's pavers. So I understand. There was a mountain there that looked kind of a pyramid. It's like, let's put some pavers around it. But that's not the same as building a freaking pyramid like Giza. It doesn't require the same kind of work.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to investigate it more myself. But I think they say there's 4 or 5 pyramids there in Bosnia, similar to Egypt, the way they're arranged are similar.
Three, yeah, this big one and this one. You show me one bit of evidence that convinces you that there's a real stone pyramid underneath that mountain slope that appears to be pyramid, okay? You show me
a proof. I should do that, then I should send it to you.
But I didn't find any.
Okay, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, so yeah, I wonder, yeah, I'd like to get them on my show. That was just one example. Okay, I should look into that more.
I've got his email. I've got his Skype contact if you want to contact him.
Yeah, send it to me because we've just emailed. Yeah. But you know, the Barnes Review, you probably know this, have a recent book out called The Great Pyramids Hoax, saying that in 1832, the Masons went into the Pyramid of Giza and they falsely made this inscription saying this is a tomb for Egyptian mummies, but that the Egyptians never had that idea. There were no mummies ever found in the pyramid. There were in other places. So it seems like 200 years ago, the Jews and the Masons already knew, oh, maybe this is some advanced electricity power generator. We don't want the Goy to know this, so let's just say it was a tomb. So they've been keeping up this lie for a couple of centuries. The new book by the Barnes Review. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so it would make you wonder, you know, what the connection has been over the centuries then behind concealing any UFO or alien activity.
Yeah, well, one thing that comes up, obviously, with the oil companies wanting to maintain the biggest business in the world is they don't want free energy, you know, and that would empower the Goy. It would eliminate poverty. It would be such great empowerment for humanity if we had free energy and they wouldn't be selling us oil. So that's one motivation amongst many, I would say, to suppress anything like that, whether it's from UFOs or whether it's from advanced ancient global technology like the pyramids. Even if we examine the Pyramid of Giza, if you really look at the structure on the inside, it looks like some kind of a power plant. You know, like, why would they design it this way if it was a tomb and people can actually measure electricity coming out of the top of the thing, you know?
So look, that it wasn't a tomb, it defies logic that it would be a tomb, because if you look at the technology that they had in those days, if we think of how they made these earthen ramps around the pyramid and put these heavy 20-ton rocks on these wood rollers and had 100 slaves pulling uphill to go all the way around, just to quarry the stone and bring it to that location with modern tools of diamond bits and huge takes 20 years plus, yeah, just to, yeah, quarry the stone.
Yeah.
So this pharaoh, if he wanted this to be his tomb, he would have to start when he was an infant and say, start quarrying, guys, because, yeah, you're going to need another 100 years to build the stuff the way you're going. So it couldn't be done, really, in one person's generation, even if they devoted their entire life into building their tomb.
And I know
all the resources, all the manpower of the country.
And all the tools that they have been debunked, like they've debunked every method they possibly could have done. It shows they couldn't have done it if they had like bronze saws and stuff. It just couldn't have been done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we have that and the fact that it looks like it very well could be a power plant. There's all these other allusions to, some kind of a cosmic direction.
Yeah, connection with the stars, Sirius, the Earth.
Towards the planet Sirius. And
that there's pyramids all over the world, very similar design. So it indicates a global civilization.
So what was that? I mean, you know, to some extent it has to be speculation, but was it an energy grid, if you will, maybe put in the specific crossroads of different ley lines that tended to be...
Giza is like in the center of the world, the geographic mass. But people have devoted years of study to this. People, just for the audience, can go to YouTube. There's a lot of YouTube videos about this, like the free energy electricity may have gone from the tip of one pyramid to the next to move it around different places of the world, kind of like Tesla was working on a similar idea, and they have aquifers under the pyramid. So there's a lot on YouTube and Google, a lot of information. People really study this in depth from a power perspective.
Yeah, and it's easy to get lost in the different interpretations of this, you know, but, you know, at some point, if you have as a given in your belief system that UFOs are real, they exist, they've always been here, aliens have always lived with us, it's easy to just say the aliens did it, you know? It's easy to look at it that way.
Yeah, I'm not saying that. I think humans could have done it. But I think the thing that people are not saying is that the international Jews are suppressing this information. Like, there's some really good videos by the Bright Site UFO channel with Jimmy. And he just says, well, archaeologists are protecting their careers and Egyptologists, but he's not saying there's a larger global force that is suppressing this information. It's not just the Egyptian authorities. Only the international Jews have this power. Nobody is saying this except Brian Rue on YouTube. So this is why I want to make the connection that this is another example of Jewish power. So it must be something really good that they're hiding from the Goy.
Well, to me, what it forces somebody to come to terms with when you realize that it most likely wasn't a tomb of a pharaoh, okay? Almost like, no way, all right? Then what was it then? And why are they hiding it from us? It's like every other conspiracy. You see that the establishment dogma doesn't make sense, so you look to alternative reasons. So what options are they? Either that the aliens built them, or that humans built them at some undisclosed time in the past, not necessarily 2500 BC, like they're telling us.
Maybe 30,000 years ago.
Maybe 10,000 BC. So what would that show? That our paradigm of thinking that we went from cavemen to learning how to do agriculture, to building cities in Mesopotamia or whatever the traditional history tells us, is false. That's the big conspiracy. So why are they telling us a lie? So what could it be? Either that, well, okay, either that civilization in sometime in the distant past was a lot more advanced than we think it was, maybe even more advanced than we are, because they were able to harness this natural energy and do all these kind of things. So maybe there was some kind of Atlantis or Lemuria, and it got destroyed due to a comet or due to nuclear warfare or due to disease or virus or who knows what calamity destroyed it. Well, that would turn our entire paradigm of the way we perceive our past and who we are and where we came from, because it doesn't go from ape to man to caveman to...
You're right. It's upside down.
Yeah, to agriculture. It goes from cyclical. So maybe before Atlantis, there were many similar cycles. Maybe Lemuria was 50,000 before that.
Maybe even 50,000. A billion years back.
Maybe, who knows?
Yeah.
Exactly. And to what extent do alien colonies play into this? Could it be that there were the dynamics of the different neighboring planets or planets with life has changed over the years to where, you know, there were different interests back then, and then they got abandoned, and then new interests, who knows? But that whole Pandora's box of, are there aliens? And then a whole slew of conflicting alien confederations is another big leap to make in people's thinking, right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, you got to stick with, well, what proof do we have? And obviously there's a lot of proof for much of this, but as far as drawing up a conclusive sketch of what happened, I don't know whether we're there yet.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I think we can prove that it's the international Jews are suppressing our true history. Obviously, you know, with some investigation, we can tell we're being lied to about us being hunter-gatherers 11,000 years ago, and there's nothing before that, you know?
Yeah, so when we're thinking of the elite controlling us because they know things that we don't and are keeping us in the dark, well, what things do they know? Could one of those things be the whole alien connection and the real history and what their role in that whole agenda?
Yeah, I think those are the two big ones, alien connection and our history, you know? Or advanced ancient global history, yeah. They have the power to suppress it and the motive.
When you see UFOs in some of these videos that they make, supposedly real videos, when they travel, how would you compare their travel to what we see as an airplane traveling?
Well, I think they can get from one solar system to ours maybe within hours or days.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about physical video that we've seen.
Well, they can zigzag at 10,000 miles an hour.
They travel much, much faster than airplanes, right?
And they stop and turn at right angles.
They stop and turn at right angles, which defy the propulsion combustion engine kind of flight that airplanes have, right?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Have you noticed another interesting thing? That when they fly away from you, they don't vanish slowly like an airplane, but they just kind of disappear?
Yeah, it's like they leave our dimension, or they have a cloaking device or something. They can disappear on the spot, many witnesses have said.
Okay. Well, if that's the case, then that opens the door to another big question, which is, we can see a limited amount of energy within the range of perception that we have. But beyond that, whether it's on the infrared side of the spectrum or the ultraviolet spectrum, there's other things going on that we can't see or sense because they're beyond our ability to sense, but not that they're not there, right? So it's that realm really that has been called the angelic realm, the satanic realm, the UFO realm, you know, and energy is there, although we don't see it, but it's there. So what makes it visible to us is the question. So could be a UFO in my room right now flying, but I don't see it because... Yeah. You see what I'm
it's
saying?
The frequency, they can raise their frequency so it goes beyond our level, or lower it so it goes beyond our level. We just see in a narrow range. So I think it's like a frequency. Like Tesla said, think of the universe in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration, Tesla said.
Exactly, exactly. And he was the master of being able to see energy and understand it.
Yeah.
Everything he did was about his understanding of energy. He discovered the radio.
Yeah, he invented the radio.
In the 1800s, right?
He even invented remote control radio. Right by the time he invented it, he invented remote control at the same time.
Remote control, right, remote control, alternating current, which is a more sophisticated understanding of electricity.
That's our light right here, alternating current, yeah.
Right, right. The fluorescent lighting.
Yeah, he did that.
Yeah, all these things show that he understood energy, and all these, of course, Tesla coil and these free energy devices and all these things that he built shows that he was able to maybe see or sense, like a clairvoyant can sense energies that most of us can't.
Yeah, he would channel his inventions and build them complete in his mind before he would put his hands on them, But there's also the international Jewish connection with Tesla. Like J.P. Morgan suppressed the idea of free energy, wouldn't let him build what he wanted to do. Jews suppressed that.
But that's an interesting point, though. Okay, J.P. Morgan was a Rothschild stooge, of course, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now,
was he Jewish?
He might have had some touch of the Jew brush, but overall, he was a Gentile. But he was beholden to the Jews.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but that was a transition phase. I mean, you had a lot of powerful people, Andrew Carnegie and Henry Ford and Thomas Edison and Avril Harriman and people that were movers and shakers, many of them Jews, other not Jews, but maybe because the Jewish banking was already taking over control, they were kind of beholden to the Jews in many ways, right? So it's interesting now, J.P. Morgan, let's say he wasn't the Jew, but was beholden to the Jews and they told him what to do. Well, he initially funded Tesla. They were kind of beholden to come up with what ended up being free energy. So if the secret word within the Jewish elite is let's keep the Gentiles stupid and not know that free energy exists so that we can use it and they can't, why would he authorize and finance Tesla to build this energy?
I have a theory. Maybe Tesla was smart and didn't tell him that he couldn't put a meter on it. Maybe he thought he could put a meter on it and charge people for it, and then he found out, well, if people know this, then I can't put a meter on it. So it went so far, and then Morgan said, I'm not going to fund this anymore. I'm just guessing. I haven't researched this.
Yeah, I haven't either, and that might be the case. Yeah, maybe they didn't realize that until afterwards. But it's funny how we're made to look at this as strictly a financial point of view. There's no money in it, therefore I'm not gonna fund it. But what if it's just we definitely don't want the Goyim to know that this kind of energy is available.
Yeah, it's bigger than money, yeah. It's about empowering the Goy, freedom for humanity. They don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Tesla was committed to the service of mankind, what's best for all of humanity, So it's a shame a really good person is surrounded by Jewish power. What could he possibly do? He didn't have the power to overcome that.
Yeah.
And I think with ancient history, that famous quote from Orwell, he who controls the past controls the future, he who controls the present controls the past. So they're really trying to not let the genie get out of the bottle about advanced ancient global history. But there's so much YouTube videos, so much information on the net about structures all over the world. I mean, they can't hide it anymore, but still the mainstream local university archaeology professors don't discuss it. So this indicates global Jewish control. Who controls the universities? The cultural Marxist Jewish elite controls the universities. So you can definitely see the mainstream professors. Why is it they won't discuss this, Walt?
Well, that's the reason why, because they're under Jewish control. So, folks, we have 27 and a half seconds left. Thanks for listening to the Brian Roux Show on Revolution Radio. Please send in your donations to Revolution Radio. And I have 2,780 videos for your listening, edification, and education on my BitChute channel with 30 playlists. So you click on the Brian Roux Show when you're at the channel, and then look for the playlist there. This particular talk is on the playlist called Ancient Events, Global Civilizations. So I'll be back next week on June 29th. Thanks for listening, folks. And keep listening to Revolution Radio. Stay tuned for the next show. Thanks, folks.
Revolution Radio. She travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, and there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Hello, my name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically